And welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from the Pennsylvania Bar Association, its pro bono services, we have its director, Dave Travaskis, and its deputy director, Bill Baldwin. Gentlemen, welcome.
It's very good to be here, Laura.
Thank you, Laura.
And you've both been on this show before, so you know the drill. The next 30 minutes, we're going to be talking about the Pennsylvania Bar Association, what it is, and in particular, pro bono services for the public. And so let's kick it off with, what is the Pennsylvania Bar Association?
And basically, the Pennsylvania Bar Association is a voluntary association of attorneys. We have other members who are non-attorneys, associate members, who include or just expanded to include paralegals. But the idea is that this was a voluntary association of lawyers. In some states, being part of the Bar Association is a mandatory requirement for you to practice law. Pennsylvania, where we don't make you wear motorcycle helmets, we don't make many things mandatory. And so lawyers can practice law without being a member of our organization. And to give you some sense of that, we have about 22,000, 23,000 members, and there's probably about 70,000 lawyers in Pennsylvania. But Bill and I are both part of the professional staff that supports the lawyers. And that's what we're here to talk about, what we do to help support them.
Well, I'm amazed. 70,000 attorneys out there, and only 22,000 are members, and there are benefits to attorneys for joining their bar association.
Oh, absolutely. Some of the benefits include, obviously, educational opportunities through the bar association. We have many sections and committees that are concentrated in specific areas of law. So there's an opportunity to develop collegiality and camaraderie with fellow attorneys. The Bar Association sponsors numerous events, has amazing opportunities for members. David, maybe you want to talk about some of the other great things that we have to offer?
We provide certain tools that help lawyers with their practice in terms of search engines that allow you to check out the cases that you're looking at, things that would cost upwards of $1,700 to $2,000 for a single attorney, which is obviously 10 times what our fee is to belong to the association. But I think one of the things you find is that in Pennsylvania, we are a state that is in many ways very balkanized. We talk all the time about having a unified judiciary, but we have 67 counties in Pennsylvania, and there are 60 judicial districts, meaning that some of those counties have two counties in a single judicial district. I sometimes joke, and this is only a little bit of humor and maybe a little bit of truth, that when I travel county to county, I not only pack my lunch, I take my passport just in case.
And that is, unfortunately, the real truth about Pennsylvania. It is, this is one of the most diverse states in the country. But attorneys and the legal profession is there for the public,
correct,
on the public's behalf. And that, of course, goes right into the discussion of what is pro bono.
Well, and I want to tell you, Laura, that when I talk to law students, often first-year law students, and they're so eager, by third year, they're not answering questions like this. But I'll ask them, what's the difference between the plumber who goes down to a place like New Orleans after Katrina and the lawyer who does that? And they'll have great answers. I tease them, the plumbers will probably make a lot more money than they will as lawyers. But when it gets down to brass tacks, the plumber who goes and does service after a disaster is a saint. The lawyer who goes and does service after a disaster is simply being a lawyer. It's part of our professional obligation. And Bill's going to talk to you about, there is actually a rule we have in our professional guidelines, Rule 6.1, that is the guiding light for the work that we do.
Obviously, lawyers follow an ethical code, and it's called the Rules of Professional Conduct. And as David said, Rule 6.1 encourages all attorneys to do pro bono publico or pro bono work. And really what that means is work for the public good. So volunteer their time to provide legal services to the indigent, to folks that couldn't otherwise access legal services. And it's really critical because obviously there's a huge need for legal representation and access to the courts. So this is a very important obligation for attorneys throughout the state to be willing to give time and provide this pro bono service to the public.
There's one little mantra. I have the right to legal representation. And you might have the right to legal representation, but getting it is something totally different. And it really only applies in criminal cases.
Correct.
And yet we need attorneys so often in other areas that have more impact on our lives than actually a criminal case can.
Well, I always talk about the reason we have the criminal right is because as a society, we so value our freedom. And it's in our Constitution, there is language that allows the Supreme Court to say that you have what we hear on the TV shows, you have a right to a lawyer. If you can't afford one, one will be provided for you. And that is in the criminal field. And in Pennsylvania, we are moving very slowly forward to try to shake off being one of the worst states for providing that constitutional protection, partly because it had always been funded county by county. And Governor Shapiro is doing the first big effort to do some funding statewide. But where there is a constitutional right, you still have a very limited actual representation of the poor because the levels, the guidelines at which you do qualify for that free service of criminal representation is not at the level that it probably should be so that people who can't pay for a lawyer could get one. There are lots of people who don't qualify for the cutoff on criminal defense and still can't afford a lawyer. Or in paying for a lawyer, they're sacrificing some of the fundamental needs people have of health, housing, food. Bill and I work on civil legal aid where there is no constitutional protection. Mm-hmm. There is a hodgepodge of cases, laws that do give some rights to representation to the poor, but it's such a mix. And it happens in some ways that get very disturbing. You can take away my children without me having a right to representation in terms of having representation that I don't have to pay for if I'm poor. Those children might be taken away by children and youth. They might be put into a foster care. It may just be the grandparents coming and doing kinship care. If after a few years someone goes to terminate my parental rights, meaning that I will never be a parent again to those children, I then have representation if I'm poor enough to qualify. But that representation is going to have to deal with the fact that nobody's told me what to do for the last few years, and I haven't done all of the things a lawyer would have told me to do so that when we go to that termination hearing, I can show I am a good parent. I've done things. Instead, what you have is the lawyer basically looking at the client and saying, what did you do? And you haven't done anything, and now you're going to lose your child, even though you're represented. So these are areas. You don't want to get too caught in the weeds, and math is not something that is on the LSAT, so we don't have to be great at math as lawyers. But if you think about it, the poverty level for our work is 125% of the government poverty level, which is itself is a story for another day, but they came up with that literally out of thin air during the Lyndon Johnson administration in the war on poverty, and we've been maintaining the same system ever since. But if a family of four is making about $25,000 of income, they probably are being just over the 125% limit. And people listening to this may say, $25,000 sounds like a decent salary. Why should you get free? But you can't pay for legal services without sacrificing, again, food, health, shelter. I really believe that at double the rate, 250% of poverty, you can't really do that without paying for it. When you get to four times that poverty level, you get to a family of four with $100,000, they can pay for legal services. They may have to stop a family vacation. They may have to give up something else. But I always wonder how in the nation like ours, the greatest nation in the world, built on the rule of law, we still allow people not to be represented. And that really is a tragedy.
And that is part of the advocacy work that you do. And I was going to bring that up towards the end, but before the show began taping today, you mentioned a study that was done in Philadelphia, because you alluded to housing and you alluded to food earlier. These are areas, landlord-tenant law, et cetera, divorce. These are the areas where you really, really need to have representation. But what was it that you found out here in Philadelphia regarding housing?
And let me just say as a beginning that it is always tricky to do good research studies of legal aid for the poor because it costs money. And in our field, when there's money, we want to hire lawyers and paralegals to help the poor. Doing a study to tell us what we see every day that there's problems isn't always effective, but it is powerful. And this study, which was done, it's called the Stout Study, S-T-O-U-T. And if you Google that, the Stout Study of Landlord-Tenant in Philadelphia, you'll get that study. But what they basically did was looked at all of the unrepresented people in landlord-tenant court and then looked at the costs when people are wrongly evicted, people are removed from their housing because they're not represented. And for a cost, basically a cost of $3 million of paying for lawyers to represent those poor people unrepresented today, the Stout study suggested very strongly that the city of Philadelphia would save over $53 million. $3 million investment, save $53 million. Now, COVID came, and it made it harder to do those things. But one of the very important innovations that the Philadelphia Municipal Court Landlord-Tenant Program has put in place is that no landlord may file an eviction case without first going through some form of mediation, which allows the tenant to, with a neutral third party, to basically look at the situation. It's not a perfect situation because you can still move on to eviction and you probably won't be represented in most cases. But we are making inroads there. And around the state, we're trying to do that. Philadelphia is a leading model. Obviously, Philadelphia is a huge city. It's still considered the poorest large city in America. So we have both a lot of lawyers in Philadelphia and we have a lot of poor people. So we get to do some good experiments there.
Classy has been on several times over the years, and they had a study, and again, this goes back 4 or 5 years as well, but that a dollar spent on legal services in these civil matters paid back, and I can't remember now what it was, but it was maybe 100 times back again, and that was in lost services, too. Because people who lose out on benefits and entitlements obviously are not using them to buy and to pay taxes and to participate in our economy. So it was overwhelming, the return on the dollar spent on legal services.
It's very interesting. In our field, we talk a lot about a study from the 1980s. And I always like to say in the 1980s, I had a 32-inch waist. So things change over time. I'm not sure we should be using those kind of studies for anything today. But we still use a statistic from those studies that 1 in 5 people who are at the poverty level in civil legal aid matters get help. Part of the reason that number even comes close to seeming true today is that many poor people know that they aren't going to get services, so they don't even try. But when we go out and we talk to poor people, and we do at our clinics, we're always talking with the folks and asking them, you know, what's going on? What's the problem that brought them here today? But when you talk to people, you find out they have a myriad of problems. The person who's being evicted obviously has a landlord-tenant problem. But, you know, if they're evicted, besides housing, we're maybe going to have a new school for the kids. Besides the issue of what are we doing if you don't have enough money to pay the rent, do you have enough money to pay for the food for kids? I grew up on the mean streets of Swarthmore here in Delaware County. I, you know, am a child of great privilege. I went to Duke University for a couple of my degrees, and I then taught in a private school outside Chicago. So I really didn't see much poverty. My mother ran Girl Scout troops in Chester, and the girls in the projects and the Girl Scouts came from a very different world. And I, you know, would interact with them. I drove a bus of girls from Chester to Mexico City on a Girl Scout trip when I was 19 and a junior in college. But those were just tastes of experiences. When I came back to Philadelphia, I worked in a candy and nut business. And I had employees who were mostly making minimum wage. And it was the first time in my life that I saw that everyone didn't have opportunities because of connections, because of privilege, because of money. And we had, and this is so interesting because Bill is a great hero of public interest and started doing work, one of the first lawyers doing work in domestic violence. But when I was running the store in the early 1980s, nobody was caring about domestic violence. And we had 2 employees who lived together, and the male was beating the female. And we did all the wrong things that people try to do when they try to handle these things, the stuff that we know now from the work in domestic violence that people like Bill have done don't work. You know, we sat them down and met with them. We took his apologies. We took her acceptance of it. And, you know, the first time she just came to work with a black eye. The second time she came to work with a broken arm. We did more interventions. The third time we had to go to the emergency room where she was so beaten, she ended up in intensive care. And because we had a multi-city company, but we could send her to Detroit to a store that was run by all women and give her a new home and new life. But that was such a rarity there, and we felt like we had really failed. And it was the first time to see that people in poverty have those horrible experiences every single day. That doesn't mean that you can't have domestic violence and wealth, but you know what? It's in some ways, it's easier to escape when you have a 20-room house than when you're sharing a one-bedroom apartment.
And again, having done that work myself for so many years, it was often very eye-opening to see how little resources many of the people we served had. No families, perhaps no education, low-paying job, just very few opportunities. And having pro bono services available for domestic violence victims was critical in helping them to be able to move forward and to be able to get their lives back together again.
Well, but so many of the domestic violence organizations have in-house attorneys
that
work with the clients directly. But for someone who just is facing a divorce, they just want to have a divorce. Having an attorney, you mentioned it again before we began taping, that it expedites it by up to a year for in each
our
case.
Our study in Philadelphia, again, a study that was offered from a group out of Harvard Law School. They did work with VIP, which is a standalone pro bono project in Philadelphia. And what they found, the people who were going through divorces who were represented got divorced about a year and a half ahead of the people who were unrepresented. And, you know, you may say to yourself, well, what's the big deal? You're still going to get divorced. Well, no, you're going to have costs by being married still. You're going to have things, opportunities that you can't take advantage of. You're going to have a harder, tougher time moving forward. And that's where representation with lawyers really matters. It's funny. I don't want to be dismissive to our peers who are full-time professional legal aid attorneys. We have a civil legal aid system, and I'm going to mention one of my mentors, a name I love to drop, but Edgar Kahn. And if Edgar Kahn is a name that your listeners don't know, they should find out about him. Edgar Kahn and his late first wife, Edgar passed just a couple years ago, but his first wife, Jean Camper Kahn, went to Swarthmore College. So they have a Delaware Valley connection. And they went to Swarthmore College in the 1950s. And when they graduated from Swarthmore, they went to Yale. Edgar got his PhD in English and then came back to law school at Yale. And his wife, Jean Camper Kahn, got her Yale law degree. They went and worked for Bobby Kennedy in the Justice Department. And at the time they were starting in the Justice Department was when we had the Gideon decision that enunciated this constitutional right to criminal representation. Ironically, that criminal right, that constitutional right was first provided by pro bono attorneys. There was no system like we have today of public defenders. It took some time for that to be done. And until that happened, the judges just called all the lawyers in and said, you've got to start taking cases and helping people out without pay. But Edgar, seeing this with his wife in criminal law, took a grant from the Ford Foundation and went back up to New Haven, where Yale is, and ran a clinic in civil legal aid that summer. They produced a law review article, and I've written law review articles. I didn't change government policy with mine. Edgar and Jean with their law review article, it actually ended up creating what we have today as the National Legal Services Corporation. Although the funny story there is that Bobby Kennedy and Sergeant Shriver were so impressed with the article, they took it to Lyndon Johnson, who in his colorful way, and we won't be as colorful here, he basically said, why should I, expletive, hire lawyers who would sue me? And it really doesn't become, there was a government legal aid system created almost immediately afterwards, but the formal Legal Services Corporation, we just are celebrating their 50th anniversary this year, and that goes back to Nixon. So it did take some time to make this happen. Still, our legal aid programs in Pennsylvania, the legal services offices, people who qualify for legal aid, who get to the office. So we're talking in some places where somebody's had to travel 100 miles to get to that office. But people who qualify for the legal aid and who get to the office, still only 2 out of 3 actually get any kind of direct help. And that really is depressing when you think about it, because there's so many people who don't even know they have the right to go to an office. And that's one of the other things we want to talk about, what you can do to find resources.
Let's start in on that now, because we're going to run out of time. So who qualifies for services? And it is obviously it is based on income.
Mm-hmm.
And what are the services that one can get help dealing with? Because we've already talked about family law. I keep touching on health care, incredible debt. Landlord-tenant, obviously, is one issue. And then work situations can be in there as well. So who qualifies? And then let's talk after that about if you don't qualify, there are still resources out there through the Pennsylvania Bar Association.
And as we had discussed earlier, for legal aid, for services through them, you have to be at 125% of poverty. So again, it's not most middle-income people are not going to qualify for those services. But there are a lot of other resources that are available that hopefully would be able to provide, if not direct legal representation, at least some form of assistance. And David, maybe we should talk about Free Legal Answers as one of the resources.
I always say the first thing you should look at if you have a legal need of any sort, regardless of your income, you should look at something called palawhelp.org. It is a system. There's a national system. So if you're not in Pennsylvania, if you're over our listeners in New Jersey, you can actually go on palawhelp.org and go to the bottom and it'll tell you law help in other states and you can get to the New Jersey link. But that has one of the best search engines. It's really one of the best mobile search devices I know. It has a box that appears when you look at it on your phone or on your computer. And if you just put in that box, let's say we had a Delaware County landlord-tenant matter, and you put in Delaware County landlord-tenant and clicked, it would give you every resource in the PA Law Network on landlord-tenant in Delaware County. Some of that might be the Legal Aid of Southeast Pennsylvania, the legal aid provider. Some of it might be the Delaware County Bar Association, which has its own pro bono program that Bill was so instrumental in creating. It might be something from the Pennsylvania Bar that we've produced, and it may be materials that tell you what your rights and responsibilities are as a tenant or something that talks about cases and things. But it's a great first place to start. And one of the things that you will also see is something called Pennsylvania Free Legal Answers. And Bill, do you want to just tell them about that?
Well, Pennsylvania Free Legal Answers is an amazing program. Again, there is an income guideline for that. It's 250% of poverty, so it's double the income qualifications for legal aid. But you can actually go onto the site, and it's pa.freelegalanswers.org. You can also find it at the Pennsylvania Bar site, which is pabar.org. And you're able to ask questions in a variety of areas of civil law, and then attorneys volunteer their time to answer those questions. So some of those answers may be very simple, maybe just a basic question about court procedure, and a lawyer can answer that. Or it's also an opportunity if people are trying to connect with resources, lawyers can provide them with that. So I'm a volunteer, and I go on periodically and review questions on that site. And I can sometimes then provide direction to people. Okay, based on what you're telling me, you may qualify for this services. For example, Legal Services for the Disabled provides services for those folks in the Philly metro area that qualify. So that may be a resource. Or I may direct you to your local bar association if they have a pro bono program. So it's a great opportunity for the public to get direction, information, and answers. But also it's a wonderful way for attorneys to volunteer to fulfill their obligation to do pro bono. It's easy. They can answer the questions that they want. They don't have to dedicate a lot of time to it. It's phenomenal. We have many, many very dedicated attorneys who serve and provide answers on Free Legal Answers.
And it's one of the ways that Bill and I fulfill. I've said that lawyers don't have to do pro bono service under our Supreme Court rules. It's aspirational. But at the Pennsylvania Bar, if you're a lawyer working for the bar, you need to do it. We're required to do it. And it's one of the ways that we do this.
And again, states participate in the Free Legal Answers program. Pennsylvania does New Jersey and Delaware?
Delaware does, and New Jersey is on hiatus right now. They're coming back, so we expect that to be up. If you just go to any of the Free Legal Answers, the national site, you can see it. And there's something that's really exciting. There is a federal ABA Free Legal Answers, and that deals with both immigration questions and military benefit questions.
Mm-hmm. And obviously benefits, and I mentioned entitlements, that's an area that if you have someone working on your behalf, if you have an advocate, you're going to get more benefits and the ones that you actually are entitled to have. But the great thing about freelegalanswers.org, too, is that it's interactive. You get the answer, but then you can answer back and say, I don't understand, or I think here's another fact that maybe pertains to this situation.
And Laura, I love to tell stories, and I get accused sometimes of telling stories and not working. But one of the very interesting cases we had on Free Legal Answers, and it goes to the question of, are we really providing meaningful help? Well, this person had been living with their uncle, and their uncle died, and they have a bunch of cats, and they're living in the uncle's house. But now that the uncle's died, there's no will. She can't pay the bills because she was writing out the checks for her uncle, but now that he's dead, she can't write checks because nobody can sign them. And she really has no knowledge, and she's worried. The reason she gets on the Free Legal Answers is she's worried about her cats, what will happen to them. she posted as a family law. Clients identify their issues. So she thought it was a family law problem because it involved her uncle and it involves the law. But I realized that it was miscategorized. It's an estate question. And I asked her, were there any other relatives of the uncle living? And there was just her brother, who had already let her know that he had no interest in anything the uncle had. He had renounced. So I said, did you get a death certificate? And she did. And we wrote these letters back and forth, emails back and forth. So I told her if she had been in Montgomery County or Delaware County, I would have told her to meet me at the courthouse and I would have broken the confidentiality. We do this anonymously, but she knows she's getting a vetted lawyer. You have to be vetted by us before you can be on the site. She was in Western Pennsylvania, though. So I told her where she needed to go with her death certificate. She needed to set up letters of administration. She was a capable enough person once she realized there was something she could do. She thought there wasn't something that she could do. And so she became the administrator of her uncle's estate. And today, instead of having a woman without a home and 11 cats, feral cats out there, and 11 cats in the course of a year could be like 20,000 cats. It really, cats are amazing. She's keeping a home. She's keeping the cats. She's paying taxes. She's doing all the things that we want. And she's able to have a wealth accumulation from her uncle that would have never happened had it not been for this free legal answers.
And again, harkening back to the idea that it pays for itself tenfold. And I hate to say it, we are out of time. And so now we have to do the big wrap up here. What is the takeaway from our conversation today?
We want your listeners to know there are resources available, and we've talked a lot about some of the resources that have income guidelines. Some bar associations, local associations, also have things called modest means panels. Now, that varies from county to county, but for people that may not qualify for free legal answers or for legal aid, sometimes they also may qualify for the modest means representation. So I would encourage your listeners to reach out to their local county bar association to see if they have that kind of program. But again, there are resources available for people, and it's such a great need today. And I think one of the things that the Pennsylvania Bar Association has really championed is the idea of being able to make pro bono services and assistance available to the general public.
Mm-hmm.
I think the important thing that everybody should know is that lawyers, the best lawyers, are doing this pro bono work. And, you know, we've had a wonderful time with you without even getting to our largest pro bono program, which is actually dealing with veterans. It's called Wills for Heroes. And they can Google it, Pennsylvania Wills for Heroes. It is not an income program. It's a status program. And it started for first responders after 9/11. Two-thirds of the first responders who died on 9/11 died without wills. And we're an incredibly generous nation. Money for their families came pouring in. But without wills, there was no idea to figure out what they would have done with it. And again, I'm very proud of the lawyers who handled that and were very, very fair in trying to distribute things. But it wasn't the wishes of the people who died. And that's what we've done. We've done over 23,000 estate packages. We work out of a program that was originally started by a partner at Ballard Spahr here in Philadelphia, the Pennsylvania version of Wills for Heroes. And we do them almost every weekend, all fall, all spring, and into the summer, and a little bit into the winter. So that's something. What you should know is there's always help out there if you try. But you also have to figure you need to not get frustrated if you're looking for help, because I often get people who are calling me at the end of a year's worth of searching and they haven't been able to find any help. Sometimes they call me the first and we get them help right away. There is help out there. There are great lawyers who are doing wonderful things for people out of this public good focus that we have.
So the first place to start that search online is?
I would tell you to go first to palawhelp.org. That will connect you with the Pennsylvania Bar, but it will connect you with all of the other programs, and it will connect you with Free Legal Answers.
The other one that you threw out there again is pa.freelegalanswers.org. And for wonderful resources that you can find your way back through, pabar.org is the Pennsylvania Bar Association's own website, pabar.org. There is help out there. You mentioned status, heroes, the elderly. There are groups that get representation. Again, you can find it if you go looking for it before you get in too deep. And that is pabar.org and PALawHelp.org. Great places to go. My guest today, the director of the pro bono services for the Pennsylvania Bar Association, Dave Travaskis, and Bill Baldwin, the deputy director. Thank you both for coming in today.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you so much.
You're always welcome back. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.